This is...
Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politrics.
Welcome to Wow What a Week, hashtag Politrics. With the BRICS summit happening in Johannesburg, many were worried they wouldn't make their appointments due to being delayed by all the traffic. We were more worried that our Minister of Interpretation might not make it, because he'd be delayed by security for asking too many questions. So please give a wow welcome back to Botsang Modimo wa me Mbuyilwa. How are you doing, brother?
Morning, Mr. Shikwane. Morning to the followers and the viewers. Yeah, what an important week in Gauteng, in South Africa, in the world at large.
Why is it a big deal that the BRICS summit is in South Africa?
Look, it's rotational. That's the first basis. It's rotational. We know that next year it will be going to Russia. And then after that, it will go, I think, to Brazil in South America. But for us, obviously, the tourism minister must be very happy, and the Tourism Council of South Africa, because of the number of dignitaries who are in here for the whole week. And you know that when such summits or events happen, people don't come for the three-day summit and then they disappear. They will come weeks after. So the hotel industry...
The government credit card must work.
Yeah, exactly. So the, for tourism purposes, only for this week, I think that South Africa did very well. And some people may be left behind, you know, to say, no, I want to stay another week in South Africa to tour the country.
My small house. My wife is leaving. My small house is coming. I must stay another week.
I am not going to subject myself to that interpretation. But nonetheless, it is also very important, because it is regarded actually as the most extraordinary BRICS summit since ever. You know, this 15th summit of BRICS, because of the application of over 20 new member states who were interested in joining BRICS this coming week. And the BRICS member states, or founding member states in terms of Russia, Brazil, South Africa, and India, would announce which of those applicants have been admitted as BRICS members, or would be admitted in a short space of time. So a very all-important one, but also the influence that BRICS member states, in this instance particularly, Russia has on the Ukraine-Russia-NATO war, the situation with ECOWAS or with Niger in West Africa. Some of the BRICS member states have interest in that, Russia particularly, and China.
Sure.
And South Africa being a peacemaker in Africa, you know, also is interested in what is happening in ECOWAS. But again, lastly, and if we go dwell much into it, is the de-dollarization process that Russia is pushing up front. You know, the de-dollarization of the world, you know, to move away from the American US or the US dollar dominating.
Yeah, let's trade in our own currencies.
Yes. So that's why this BRICS summit is much more important.
What did you think of Putin's opening statement? You know, obviously he's still trying to justify the war, but I almost feel like the other leaders didn't play into that victim playing.
Well, I think diplomatically, the Arab member states, with the exception of China, you know, Xi Jinping came and said people must relax, they must stop worrying about whether China is going to support Russia. But before I go to what President Putin said, it's very, very crucial for our followers and viewers to go and read into the statement of President Xi Jinping of China, because he did mention that as much as they are now at the moment not supporting their friend Russia with the war, and he was very clear to say the war is with NATO, man, who are over 10 member states. Russia is on the winning front of it. Alone, they've defeated over, you know, 10 NATO member states who are fighting Russia on its own. But most important, he said, Russia hasn't called for help because they are handling the situation, the war situation in Ukraine. And he said, most important is, if brother, friend, President Putin picks up the call and say, China, I'm under siege, China will not even blink. They will not even hesitate or think twice. They will aid Russia as a friend, as a brother against NATO, because they are now fighting on their own. But he's very convinced. Going back to President Putin, I think as a head of state, he did the right thing. He had to put in front the position of why he is not in South Africa physically. Why is he not attending BRICS? He's doing it hybrid. And the second part is justification of saying, we were never listened to. Now, this is a multilateral platform, which I am a founder member of, as Russia, and I will take advantage and explain our position and reiterate the fact that they will continue with the war in Ukraine until their demands and their 2014 agreement needs are met and are adhered to. That's one element, but it did not end there. Russia's a creation of BRICS and also in their geopolitical play has been dominated by the fact that since the collapse of the Soviet Union, Russia wanted to remove the West, particularly the American and the British dominance of world politics and world trade. So that's what Russia has been struggling and striving for. So the arrival and the expansion of BRICS is very important because Russia has been, you know, being under embargo or diplomatic as well as political and economic sanctions. They have managed to actually stand up and say to the world, the fact that we are under three or four types of embargo sanctions, they came out as recent as this week during the BRICS time to move from number six of the world growing or biggest economy, they overtook Germany to be number five.
Jeez.
And it happened this week. But in addition to that, they are the leading economy now in Europe. They've taken over from Germany. So you find a situation that he is trying to say to the world, without the dollar, and this is what President Putin is saying, he's saying to the world, without the dollar, this is how Mother Russia has performed in the last few years, and particularly in the last 2 years due to economic sanctions. So he's demonstrating, that's why he's hammering and talking more of the de-dollarization of the world market, to say, trade in your own country, in your own commodities or currencies.
So that's what we're doing.
A position that Brazil has been making more noise than Russia about. And now with the arrival of oil-rich member states to BRICS, they may trade with oil instead of with the dollar. You understand? They may put oil as their pattern in trading. We're supposed to be trading with diamonds and gold and platinum instead of using the dollar exchange rate. And people were wondering, why do countries want to trade not with the dollar but with their local currency? And this is what people should understand. There's a loss if you don't trade with your own currency. Mm. The first loss is the exchange rate loss.
Sure.
Because then you have to convert the rand to the dollar, and there's a buying and a selling price of a foreign currency. But if we enter into a bilateral trade with a foreign country, Kenya, for example, then Kenya will say, you will pay us with rands and we will pay you with shillings. And that's what BRICS is advocating for. But I think President Putin had made his statement where, you know, many and people are didn't write off that they may boycott this. But remember what we said in the past, boycotting BRICS or BRICS not taking because would have actually made the West victorious, that BRICS did not happen.
Sure.
And I'm glad that President Putin had agreed to eventually attend the summit online.
Because it would have been a distraction.
Yeah, you understand. So that's not much fanfare. South Africa also survived, you know, for not dealing with legal technicalities in the ICC. But I think it has been a successful week for the BRICS member state. And there's a lot much more that are going to happen, you know, and there's a lot of questions being asked. Is South Africa benefiting from this?
Sure.
Yeah.
And then Wagner chief Prigozhin didn't survive. What do you think of the timing? And for instance, U.S. President Biden saying he's not surprised that Prigozhin is has been taken out, as it were.
Look, there is their story. There is what happened, which we don't know, and there is my story. Their story is they expected President Putin to blow up Prigozhin or whoever he is. I doubt, you know, I looked at the military operations and I looked at this guy's history.
Mm.
I actually went to sit down this week and did a research from when this guy was born. Who is he? How did he rise here? From a criminal at the age of 18, he was in prison. Then he was sentenced to prison for armed robbery and murder for 14 years. In Russia, he's coincidentally from St. Petersburg, the same hometown of President Putin. And furthermore, of the 14 years he was sentenced to prison, he served only 9. So when he came out of prison, He started a business of selling hot dogs on the streets of St. Petersburg.
So he's the Oskido of St. Petersburg.
Actually, as I was thinking about it, I was thinking of Oskido with the fish restaurant. But moving from that, he then opened a restaurant. And this is where he comes into politics and military. He opened a boat floating restaurant on a river in St. Petersburg, where if heads of states will visit Russia, President Putin, and he opened that boat coincidentally at the time President Putin took over power in the year 2000. Mm. So he had a restaurant there to serve international stars, dignitaries, and important people. The very first person that President Putin hosted on that boat for an official is a former prime minister of Japan. It was opened a few months before, and there's rumors that that's when he was exposed to President Putin. And in 2003, which is 3 years after President Putin had held his birthday celebration on that boat. Mm. And the guy is affectionately known as the chef of Putin. But, you know, there's a lot of pictures and videos making rounds where he cooked and prepared meals. But then his business, like Oskido, as you said, went up. Mm. That he then had a company, Kondo, which became the food supplier for the Kremlin, the house of parliament or government in Moscow, mm-hmm. as well as a feeding scheme for schools and the military.
Yeah.
You see, now he's got the education part, he's feeding them, he's got the political part, he's feeding the military. And I think that's where the relationship started. Mm-hmm. But coming back to your question, Fresh, let us apply Manza. I don't come from a military background. I come from a guerrilla background. So it's not a conventional knowledge of the military. This guy, he's known to have close ties with President Putin. This guy, and I said, me and you, we laughed about it on this platform, that whatever happened in Russia on the 22nd, 23rd of June, for me, it was just a demonstration. It was not real, because him taking over Moscow is highly unlikely.
Yeah, but it was at a cost, though, because you've embarrassed your brother leader.
Exactly. Remember, President Putin has said if that happened, it's treason. It's treasonous. And many people had expected President Putin to take him out. Now, this is what happened coincidentally for our listeners and viewers. Yesterday, on Wednesday, the chief of the Air Force in Russia, who was known to have close ties with this Wagner leader, was removed from prison. President Putin fired him on Wednesday.
Dismissed
him.
Yeah.
On the same day, an Air Force missile blew the aircraft that was carrying this Wagner leader. Mm. So that's too much of a coincidence. But we should also remember that the Wagner leader was also not in good terms with other military chiefs like despite the Air Force, but the naval as well as the military heads. So that's too much of a coincidence. I will not rule out that Russia may have taken him out. They can come back with a diplomatic statement and say it was an accident. There's an embargo, there's a no-fly zone in Russia for military because of the war with Ukraine. And therefore, they will stand up diplomatically and say, we thought it was the jet of the enemy of Ukraine or of NATO. And unfortunately, it happened. That's one element. We don't know, but definitely we now know that they say the body has been identified. Kremlin has issued a statement that definitely it's him, the 62-year-old leader of Wagner. But this is my view. Why do we rule out that the West, being frustrated by the success of BRICS this past week we are covering, may have decided to embarrass and to cause stress to President Putin? Let's take our guy up. Look, he shared videos. This is another day. Remember, he agreed that he will be exiled in Belarus. He was supposed to be exiled there. So what was he doing in St. Petersburg, flying between St. Petersburg and Moscow? What was he doing there? That's one element. The second element, he released last week, when he was in the studio, last week Saturday, he released a video of him claiming to be in Mali to go and focus on the Niger crisis and not taking part there to help Niger to fight the French and so forth. So when did he go back to St. Petersburg or to Moscow, to Russia, and why they're not where he's not exiled? So there's a lot of questions at hand, but I will not rule out that the West or NATO may have taken him out in order to make the rebels and the Wagner military to rebel against Russia, to cause more strain, that Russia should divert focus away from Ukraine and focus on the Wagner air forces, that they will want to retaliate. You know, and it's not only him. Even the second in charge was one of the founder members of the Wagner group, who was the second in charge, who is also a casualty.
And apparently he also was a very shady guy.
All of them, they've got shady backgrounds, you understand? But funny enough, in around April, May this year, President Putin announced that he gave that group $1 billion to Wagner for their soldiers. They even invited their soldiers to join the army, which they refused. But they all had a shady background. In Russia, there's laws that they don't allow military gangs and operation extremists. But in this instance, they allowed and they even funded it. It may have been a strategic move for President Putin and the Russian government to say, we can't control these guys. They are getting bigger. We use them sometimes when we need them, like they've done with Ukraine. Let us rather keep them contained instead of confronting them. But yeah, if that Russia pulled that on him, it's a clear sign to those who are going to betray President Putin to say, I'm not going to play marbles with traitors. And he has said it. And if that's the case, I think this might be sending a very shocking wave to the military generals in Russia that you don't betray. You know, Russians have been historically, if you look at the Russians, have been like that. You do not betray family. You do not betray some of your own. But I'm just afraid the influence this may do to the situation in ECOWAS, in Niger, as well as to Ukraine. And also, this guy during the Ukraine war, he went on to prison and he claimed to have prisons in Russia and recruited almost 50,000 soldiers, of which plus minus 20,000 of them, they went back into Russia and they are causing a lot of atrocities there, rapes and murders and a lot of criminality. So having those people lose, and it's a bit of a challenge. But this is where the BRICS and the Wagner and the Russia issue comes in. You know, the focus is not the military. We have defocused on BRICS and focusing on the death of this guy, which was going to have a very big influence and impact about the situation in West Africa. Sure. And I think the African Union, as well as African countries, they must not put a blind eye off what is happening there. You know, before we go back to the benefits of BRICS, we should not put a blind eye there, because we may see the whole week. A declaration was issued on Thursday of the BRICS summit. You know, 29-30 page declaration and intention, and I think we should focus on that and look at the benefits.
Sure. In fact, let's stay outside the country since we're talking the Wagner Group. Let's talk ECOWAS, France, the USA. What's happening in West Africa?
Well, look, first of all, we know that France imposed sanctions and a no-fly zone to Niger, and the ECOWAS countries or member states stood up and said they threatened to attack the military in Niger. But the neighboring countries of Niger, Algeria, Mali, and Burkina Faso, they stood up and said, not at our expense. You understand? And actually, Algeria, number one, they denied France to use their airspace to get an attack Niger. That's the first element. Burkina Faso, as well as Mali, they've sent troops, you know, and arms and fighting jets, including Russia, fighting jets to that area to say, we are not going to let France, a former colonial master, as well as the U.S., to can attack Niger. So it's a deadlock situation at the moment. And ECOWAS would actually be acting against the African Union resolutions to bring peace and stability in the continent if they're going to use a military intervention there. Because, yes, it's a military coup, which is being welcomed by the citizens of Niger. But if you look at it, it's a military coup that was bloodless, actually. And at the moment, the people in Niger are saying, democracy is not working for us. These own leaders are not delivering what we're expecting. Therefore, we'll stand with the military. But I don't think they should respond. I don't think ECOWAS should respond militarily there, because it is the people that are going to suffer. It is the Nigerians that are going to suffer than the West. France is benefiting. We have seen what the French are doing in withdrawing from that region. Destruction of vehicles, destroying of mines and other equipment that that country may need. They're trying to frustrate them. This is where groups like BRICS comes in, and China and Russia as individual in bilateral relations to try and save the situation there. But I can tell you, Fresh, the military rulers in that region are not going to back off anytime soon. So time has come for Africa to rise and for Africans to say we cannot be dictated to by the former colonizers, particularly France, what it has done to West Africa. And I think they are getting the support is gaining momentum. Sure. More and more African states are saying, let those people solve their problems. Let's leave them for African resolutions.
In fact, there's another big story from this week. Guinea's President Doumbouya says foreign mining companies will no longer be able to refine resources locally. They must be refined within Guinea. Raw materials cannot be exported in raw form. This forced mining companies to reinvest within the company and provide jobs to Guinea citizens. Guinea has the largest reserves of bauxite, which is used to produce aluminium. It is used in the car and food industries.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Imagine a country like Guinea actually is the biggest supplier of the vehicles. More and more vehicles, they change from steel and metal to aluminium. If you look at engine components, it's more aluminium. It's more durable. It's cheaper. And I said, now Guinea is taking a right stand without a coup, without anything. They are saying, we are following on the footsteps of Burkina Faso, of Niger and Mali. Whatever is being produced here, they will have to bring the refineries as well as the factories to can produce in Guinea and employ people and create employment and upskill people.
You know, my concern is, though, and I'm all for this, that can we stop exporting raw materials that can be refined locally?
Mm-hmm.
My worry is a lot of this is so knee-jerk that we're going to force these companies to leave. And are we able to replace them fast enough? Are we able to build refineries fast enough to get back in motion, eventually build? Because for me, I would say to these companies, you've got a window period.
It's a time frame. Yeah.
Within the next 2 years, within the next 5 years, we expect you to be refining locally.
But Fresh.
Versus get out until you can refine locally.
Yeah. Look, I can tell you, for these countries to arrive at that point, there has been engagement. We have seen it.
They say they're tired now.
They're tired now, you understand? And every revolution or a rebellious position, you pay a price. They will pay a price. But we saw it next door with Botswana. For how long did Botswana, as an example, talk to De Beers about the 52-year-old diamond peanuts they've been getting an agreement. They've been, until the current president of Botswana, Masisi, the same way as the president of Guinea, is saying, we have been knocking at your doors. You have had over 50 years of mining our mineral, and you are making billions and trillions of rands out of it. You don't upskill people. You don't create, you know, production and processing domestically. Sure. We are tired. Leave. They will pay a price. It is not a wise economic move. But at some stage something's got to give, and you have to make critical decision and put your foot down. And again, we should look, if they leave, they will need production, will stop, mining will continue, because I think the people of Guinea are the ones who are mining there. But there are other neighboring countries. There are other economic blocks. They can look to the east now. They can look at BRICS and say, we have chucked out the West because they don't want, and they can enter into bilateral and other multilateral agreements with other, you know, economic blocks. There are several economic blocks in the world to say, the French were not delivering to us. We were not benefiting out of this. They have dumped everything. Well, we have chucked them out. Can you step in? And this is what China loves. China does it.
They're always ready.
They're always ready, but they've got the numbers. Remember, those people are over 2 billion, you know, as citizens of this country. So it's a cash 22 situation. It's a risky situation. But we have to move on. You know, it's the same as South Africa sitting there and people say, no, AGOA, there's no, we can't chuck white people out. No, we can't allow to take the economy from the hands of white people. Until when are we going to see that? I was looking this week and following the news with BRICS, and I really had to reflect. I'm one of the proponents of BRICS. And I had to really reflect. But what is in for us there as well? Number one, we are the weaker. Something very interesting that my uncle asked me this morning, Ari Botsan, just tell me, is it a coincidence or is it strategic that all BRICS member states, including the new ones, the six new ones, they are all with a coastal line or a sea. None of them are landlocked. Understand? And you can see that's China's influence, that's China's strategy, and Russia. But to say, no, if we want to trade in commodities, we need countries that has a coastal line and a sea. You can be able to move the goods because that's the cheapest mode of transport when it comes to big commodities. But again, look at BRICS in South Africa. You know, we are making noise as black people. And we shouldn't shy as South Africans to say there are blacks and there are whites in this country. And whites are the landowners and the economic owners. And black people were sitting with Trumps. People are like, small business, small business, small business. Everybody's talking about somebody who produce palm oil from Limpopo. Another one will sell his socks at BRICS. None of us is sitting there and talking about big economic productions. Who is actually going to benefit from BRICS? Mark my word. Going to be the same white capitalist controlling the economy. Because we don't own the economy. White capital in South Africa, it's monopolized.
We don't own factories.
We don't own factories. We don't own anything. You understand? We are worried about exporting Archer and Mopani worms to due to BRICS agreements. I listen to the leaders of China, Russia, and Brazil, what they want. Brazil is pushing the control of the market economy. They want BRICS to take over that control. We are bringing giants. We are bringing Saudi Arabia. We are bringing Iran. And it's like we're bringing giants into this whole thing while we are focusing on what we've been doing. We are the smallest economy. Four of the BRICS member states at the moment, they are on the top 10 economies. China is number two. Russia is number five. India is, I think, is sitting at number six. And Brazil is at number eight. We are number 40. It's not a bad number. Looking at it as an African state.
40 is a good age. Life begins at 40.
If life begins at 40. We are number 40. Other BRICS member states are sitting at 8 and moving downwards. We should not be focusing at crumbs and peanuts and small business. Yes, small business is important. But why should black people always be giving small businesses? You know, the political leader of the Black First Land First once said, what is this thing about black people focusing on chicken feet and chicken heads?
And not wealth creation.
And not wealth creation and not the fillet of the chicken. Why do we want chicken feet when the chicken has fillet? So this is what we should start being thinking. Another disturbing element. You know, President Putin, 3-4 months back, launched the BRICS TV. And in Russia, now listen to what happened. In Russia, part of the BRICS, or that leg of BRICS TV, it belongs to the state. And you know how communication and then media can sell propaganda. Then China became the second. It's half privatized. And now in South Africa, BRICS TV was launched last weekend, on the 20th. The weekend, the Saturday we were sitting here. Guess what? It's privately owned. Actually, South Africans even missed that part. That there is now BRICS TV South Africa is sitting on channel 546 on SAT, the satellite platform.
True.
And look, if you go and you look, and there's nothing wrong. I like that it mainly black people. I'm happy for that. But if you look at the people who are sitting there, the CEO is the outgoing chief director of the government communication service. 3 or 4 people, the anchor, the newsmaker, and the producer, all that, they come from SABC. Understand? But they went into a private company. It's a private company consortium that went into deals with China, and they're running with the BRICS TV South Africa League. And again, where is our GCIS? Where is our government? Why did we go that route if BRICS is a state-created entity? Don't we have confidence in government agencies and entities, and who is funding? Again, we should always guard against who is funding the people who are benefiting from multilateral contracts that the government is entering into.
True.
And like I said, I think the biggest benefactors of this BRICS 15 summit that has been expanded now from the 1st of January with 6 other countries, it's going to be white capital in South Africa. Mark my weight. Black people few will benefit if you can start selling.
There's always crumbs.
There's crumbs living there, but we're talking trillions of dollars and euros and that will be, exchanging hands in this problem. By the time we wake up, it will be like the World Cup. It will come and go. And then black people will still be queuing for crumbs.
And stuck with bed and breakfast.
Exactly.
Okay, we need to wrap up with Zimbabwe. Elections.
Yes. Are there elections there? Are there elections? Look, you know, Fresh, it's disappointing.
A dude of mine that does my, in fact, he used to do my garden. Like years ago, but we've kept in touch.
Okay.
And he went back home because he wanted to vote. And he waited at the polling station, and no ballot papers arrived.
Yeah, well, that's the biggest. I actually was listening
and
to
it's
the
in news. An opposition stronghold. So yeah. For him, in his conspiracy riddled mind, why would the stronghold of the opposition not have ballot papers?
Why do you call the conspiracy a little mind? Maybe it's a fact. I'm actually for that. Let me tell you what happened. I followed this because I also have friends who come from Zim.
Sure.
And two of my ex-colleagues, they traveled home to go and vote.
Mm.
And everybody's complaining about the same. It can't be a coincidence. Mm. You know what I'm saying? That everybody's complaining about the same. The opposition, which is attracting new young people, and middle-aged, so-called middle-class people, is mainly an urban-based opposition. In this damn age, Zimbabwe flipped the coin. Normally, people, and not only in Zimbabwe, even in South Africa, people in rural areas will struggle with administrative processes to receive ballot papers. And
I heard about that.
Yes.
In the ZANU stronghold in rural areas,
yeah.
They
have access ballot papers in rural areas, in cities, in urban areas where the opposition is big. There's no people were sent back home. There's no ballot papers, and we know what happened towards the elections. You know, billboards and rallies and you know campaigns of the opposition were destroyed and so forth. But look, this is going to be a walkover of ZANU. Mm. I think they've moved from being a dictatorship under President Robert Mugabe to a military. We must also remember there was it's a military that brought Mnangagwa in.
What do you say to people who are saying Mnangagwa is actually more bold in suppressing people than Mugabe was?
I agree with them, but look at the history as well. He has always been bold. Well, I was going to use the word brutal. You are using it. He's more brutal. Mm. President Mugabe had an element of democracy for some stage.
Nyana,
you know, with him. But Mnangagwa has always been a very militant, you know, bold or brutal person. Mm. Look, it's a sad history of Zimbabwe that when the Matebele people, the Nguni people were destroyed and they were killed.
Oh, yeah. Gugurahundi.
The Gugurahundi slaughter.
Genocide.
Genocide. Mm. Who was at the head of that? It was President Mnangagwa. And it is the truth. It is the history of Zimbabwe. Mm. That's one element. Two, he is a military person. He was a head of the military at some stage under ZANU, in ZANU. He took over through a military from President Mugabe. As much as he was being seen as a civilian deputy president, but it's the military that removed Mugabe and put him there as a symbolic person. 8-year-old, he still contends for election. This man, he's actually simply saying when the Zimbabweans were trying to say President Mugabe is old, he doesn't see anything wrong with that, that he's still sitting just like his friend or his mentor, President Biden of the USA. At 8 years old, he still has another 5 years to misgovern, misrule, and mismanage Zimbabwe. I think the election process in Zimbabwe is a joke. I think it's a scam. I think it's a waste of time. But somebody asked me, then what's the solution? The solution lies in the hands of the Zimbabwean people.
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately. The Zimbabwean people, those who are sitting in South Africa and screaming, yes, they get tortured, yes, they get jailed, yes, they get murdered. But the Zimbabwean people must rise and rebel and revolt against this illegitimate government. Because it can't be legitimate when it is using processes that are not making them to choose whoever they want. You understand? And those sitting in South African exile, they know the rules and the laws. Not to say those rules and laws are justifiable, but they know that they can't contest for elections while you're outside. Go back home.
Go home and
fight.
Go home and vote.
Go and vote out for those. You know, like if the opposition in Zimbabwe were also talking one voice, like they're trying in South Africa to say, no Makanjani, whatever it takes, ANC must go out. These people, like those who are exiled in South Africa, the guy called Tyson, I forgot his real name, they should actually have said to their followers and voters and members, go and vote for anything but ZANU in order to remove these people. Then Chamisa, Nelson Chamisa would probably have invited them and say, brothers, comrades, and what, we have won the election through your vote. And therefore come back home and we'll remove all other regulations that are keeping in exile. But no. ZANU has acted the same way imperialists and neocolonialists acted. They have kept them divided. And therefore ZANU will come out at the end of this coming week and say, we are victorious, ZANU PF again, our people in the rural areas who are in majority in Zimbabwe have voted ZANU into power. But that's a farce. That's not reality. And it's an unfortunate state of affairs. Good governance in Africa, we should be re-looked into. You know, the AU should actually look at, when we speak of good governance in Africa, what are we talking about? The more Ibrahim Foundation.
Does the AU care?
They're supposed to be
care. In the bigger scheme of things, do they care?
I think they're toothless. More than care, I think they're toothless dog. The AU is a toothless dog. It's a seminar of heads of states and people with suits and ties who sits there and write regulations that they can't implement. And then the protocols, the charters, and the MOUs that member states sign are not binding.
Sure.
They don't have teeth. And once we arrive at a state where these protocols and MOUs and whatever, treaties and charters we are signing, they are binding, and people can be held accountable. I've made an example with the East African Community, the EAC.
Sure.
They've got a parliament there. And those member states of EAC, when they enter into agreements, they are binding those agreements. If one member state does not deliver on the agreement, then they can be taken to the EAC parliament. We need that kind of arrangement.
Sure.
With these regional economic bodies feeding the AU. But at a moment, the AU will not solve problems in the continent. I doubt if they will. We need to take these old people out. There's nothing wrong with old people. I've got a grandmother who's above 80. But we need to take them to where they belong. Home, rest, and take care of their health and their grandchildren instead of trying to make political and parliamentary decisions. They are misleading the continent instead of leading it. And that's why we end up with military coups and young, you know, military people in under 40 governing and taking over. It's because they're sick and tired of decisions made by this, what do you call them, octogenarians.
Octogenarians.
Yeah, so let them retire and let them let us to take over the countries and the continent. We'll see what we do to that.
Botsang Mwilwa for president. Where do we find you on social media?
I told you for president, never. I'm not going into those politics. But yeah, please check on botsangm@gmail.com as well as 082-485-9100. And on what you call social media handles, they are all at botsangm.
Botsang, thank you very much.
Thanks, my brother, and thanks to the viewers.
Interesting week, and we do it again next week.
Thank you, brother.
Hey, ta-da. This was a WOW recording at AMP Studios, downtown Johannesburg. Shout out to the Africa Podcast Network, Pezulu Works, Trevor and his team for the cinematography. All our audio imaging is done by Otis The Flow Fraser, our guest, Botsang Mwilwa, creative director, Kuvesh Mohan, and show producer, Kelezo Modisa-Geng. Email waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Till next week, have a great week in spite of yourselves.